Every time our athletes walk into this weight room, they're going to be pushed to the max.
Let's go!
The barbell hasn't changed in over 100 years. I can take a 25-pound plate, and we'll go out on the turf, and I'll have you hating life. We talk about straining your gut, pushing past that comfort level. I want a lot of energy.
What better breeding ground is there for being a success in life than the weight room?
Hey guys, welcome back to Iron Game Chalk Talk. I'm your host, Ron McKeefrey, and this is episode number 309. I want to thank you guys for listening each week. Really appreciate those of you that like, share, comment. Just helps us continue to highlight the great people in our profession. Also want to thank our sponsor, Train Heroic, for bringing this episode to you for free. I only partner with people and products that I believe in. And as you guys all know, I've spoken about Train Heroic quite a bit. I think it's the best platform out there with delivering your program. I also love the entrepreneurial feature of the marketplace. And so if you're in the market, I would highly encourage you to check them out. And if not, just make sure that you stop by at the next conference and let them know how much you appreciate them being part of the show. This week, I'm joined by Matt Wan. He's the founder and CEO of Momentus. He's a sports nutrition startup and a good buddy of mine, Chris DeSanto, who you guys all know probably. He's been on the show as well, introduced us, and they're doing fantastic things in this space. And so I wanted to bring him on, talk a little bit about the Momentus story, and just have a great conversation. So, Matt, appreciate you coming on the show, man.
Thanks, Ron. Really glad to be here. No surprises that you've heard Chris's name a few times in the space. He's well-supervised for sure.
Chris is a stud. And a big teddy bear, but he's a great guy.
He is a great guy.
Matt, let's dig into it a little bit. I mean, Momentus, it's a cool kind of origin story. So this, you know, Reader's Digest version, give us a little bit of history about it and kind of what were some of the pain points that you saw in the space that kind of took you down this path.
You know, frankly, I can give you as long or as short a version as you like, but the cliff notes of it is that it's a company that is highly personal experience driven. So I grew up using these products. I grew up training really, really hard. So when I was quite young, I was the kid that ate chicken nuggets for every meal. And essentially what happened was I started taking sports much, much more seriously. I wanted to perform better. I wanted to train smarter, train harder. And I was fortunate enough to cross paths with a guy named Dave Scholes.
Yep.
Who may have interacted with at some point. At the time, he was the strength coach at the 49ers. He's now the head strength coach at Texas Tech. Was at Utah State before that. But Dave's become a real large influence in my life and started in middle school, like I said, when I was fortunate enough to cross paths with him. And he basically taught me, I mean, other than every move I know how to do in the weight room, he taught me things from, you know, what is a carbohydrate? What is a protein? What is anything in this space? What should I be eating? I overnight went from, like I said, chicken nuggets and pizza for every meal to spinach, grass-fed beef, omelets, like just taking in as much good calories as I could. And part of that protocol, not surprisingly, was sports nutrition products. And so to get to the point for you, what started sort of journey for me in looking into this market was that I noticed that the products Dave was bringing me and the products that were being recommended by folks that I looked at as really, really smart in the space were not the same products that I saw sponsoring every inch of professional sports. Meaning that we see one product on the field, we see one product on the post-game press conferences, but behind closed doors, you understand that guys are a lot less concerned about the branding. They're a lot less concerned about the sponsorship. They're concerned about how can I get the absolute best product into my players at all times, right? Regardless of whether that's a sports nutrition product or even just food in the meal room, right? Whether that's the equipment in the weight room, the equipment that they're wearing on the field, that's what they're concerned about at the end of the day. So not surprisingly, they were taking that same approach when it came to these nutritional products. But even as, you know, what I would consider a modestly educated consumer, that observation was not easily made without a bit of inside knowledge, meaning that essentially it was not clear to me, or I believe any other consumer in this market, that the products that professional athletes were endorsing were not the same as the product that they were actually using. So what I wanted to look into and what I now want to fix is, why is that? Why is that the case? And I believe, and it's a huge reason that we started this company, right, is that that's the case because the sports nutrition market is dominated by what I believe to be longstanding, generally low quality, undifferentiated market leaders. And I think anybody who's willing to walk into any of these specialty stores, whether it's a Vitamin Shoppe or a GNC, the like, would, you know, readily make that observation that, hey, most of these products look almost exactly the same. They're claiming the same thing. They have relatively similar ingredients. They're priced the same. And as a result of that, people continue to make this observation or this claim, rather, that, quote, all whey protein is the same.
Right.
All sports drinks are the same. All protein powders are the same. All multivitamins are the same, whatever it is, right? And I started this company because I just don't believe that that's true. I don't believe that that's how we treat anything else that we put in our body. I don't believe that's how we treat anything else that applies to how we treat ourselves as athletes or even as individuals. I was gonna say, especially in the health and fitness space, it's essentially treating these products that are intended to be performance enhancing, right? That are intended to provide a benefit to you. And you're just saying, well, I'm just going to look for the best deal and, you know, buy this stuff on dollars of protein per gram. That's just like saying, well, I want to put in work in the weight room, but I just want to do squats. You know, I don't care whether I'm doing front squats or back squats. I don't care if the form's good or not. I just want to do squats, you know, just want to get strong.
Sure.
Doesn't make any sense.
Not at all. Well, I think, you know, there's tons to unpack there. And before we do, you know, I always ask this question because I think anytime you can avoid other people's mistakes walking down a path, I think you have an opportunity to get to that, to the end result, maybe a little bit quicker somehow, some way. So going down this path, starting a company in the strength and conditioning space or the performance space, what's one of the biggest mistakes you've made along the way and how you've learned from it?
I think the first mistake we made was probably being more concerned with our product or our own brand than our customer. Does that make sense?
Absolutely, yeah.
I think that was something that I had to learn the hard way. Okay, maybe I didn't necessarily have to learn the hard way, but for me personally, I did learn the hard way. And then I think we genuinely did make the mistake at first of being so concerned with the right answer, or I should say the best answer as opposed to the right answer. It's like if you were trying to build a program for a client or an athlete, right? And you put forward this plan and said, hey, this is the plan that is going to get you fastest and strongest most efficiently. That might be the case, but if your client or your athlete is not going to comply with that, or it's not what works for them personally, or they're not going to buy into it, then just because you're right doesn't mean that you've put forward the best plan for them.
No question. I don't think it's a whole lot dissimilar than the strength coach that writes the perfect program but can't get the athlete to do it, right? I mean, I think that's
100%. That's the analogy I was trying to bring out, right? And it's almost like, you know, sometimes you can prescribe the right medicine, but if they're not going to take it, what difference does it make?
Right. I think that's important, whether or not it's business or strength and conditioning. And again, I mean, some of those words, branding and those types of things, they have a negative connotation to them, but there is an element of that. I mean, you have to be a great technician. You have to have a great product, right? But then you also have to be able to manage time, people, and resources, and you have to be kind of forward thinking and always sharpening the sword. And I think, you know, whether or not you're going down the business path or you're walking into a weight room and leading a group of men or women, you have to be able to get people to buy into you and believe in you and your product and your culture. It doesn't matter how good the product is.
Oh my God. It's just so true. Right. I can't say it enough how much we started with the mindset of thinking, how do we just create the best product? How do we just create the best product? And I kept approaching it from the perspective of like, what do I think is the best product, right? Which is relevant, but it's not the final measure. The final measure is like, hey, is this the right product for the exact audience that you're trying to serve? Is this the exact audience for the best product that you're trying to serve? And I think the sooner that you get that message, the better, right? Okay. The sooner that you can start not just worrying about how can I create what I believe is the right thing to do here, but how can I create the most value for my audience or my customer, right?
Yeah, I think Tim Ferriss talks about reverse engineering, right? And you know, finding out what that end product is and kind of working backwards. And I think that's when you start with the athlete or you start with your avatar, whatever that may be, then work backwards. Usually you'll get to the right answer, but I agree 100% with you. You know, so here you are, you're a young guy. You see a problem. You see this multi-million-dollar, might even probably be billion-dollar industry at this point. With supplements, and nutritional products. You've got the 1994 Dietary Supplement Act that kind of threw everything into a disarray. You've got hyperbolic claims at this point of people and fake, you know, just paid testimonials and all those types of things. How do you attack that with maybe not that type of income behind you and even go about, you know, saying, okay, not all whey protein is the same. How do I learn this process and start to create a product that I can put out there and feel good about but compete with those big, you know, big industry, big pharma type companies?
Yeah. We had to start thinking about our customer. You know, I don't want to beat on that too much, but we had to start thinking about, okay, this is, to your point, a multi-billion dollar industry. The idea that we're going to start up today and sometime next year, we're going to have 50, 75, 100% of the market is ridiculous. In 10 years, we're not going to be there, right? That's just not what's going to happen. So we have to be really thinking about who is the literal person, the customer that we are designing our brand and our product for. And for us, that is frankly somebody like yourself. We describe them as the performance professional. That is our core customer. That is who we make our product and our brands for. It's somebody who is educated almost always formally in the space, right? And is looking past the concepts of, hey, is there a bodybuilder on the front? Is there some sponsored athlete on the front? They want to look at the substance of measures of product. That's our customer, right? And so what we did was we went to a group of individuals that we thought were representative of that group. Mm-hmm. For us, that meant strength coaches and dietitians from each of the four major leagues. So NFL, NBA, MLB, NHL, actually NCAA as well. Including guys like Dave, who I mentioned earlier. And we basically said to them, if you could create your own product in this space, if you could create your perfect product, what would you put in it? You know, name anything, right? And that was how it started for us, was the observation that we had a general idea of where we wanted to start in the space. And we had to connect that in terms of products, and we had to connect that with an audience. So we tried to go directly to that audience. And that's the reason that when you look at the products, it's, levels of detail that go over my head oftentimes, not just, hey, it's whey protein instead of soy protein, right? It's cold processed, grass fed, hormone free and antibiotic free whey isolate. And they literally had countries that they prefer the dairy farming practices into those in the United States. Like, I now know that we prefer to use, you know, magnesium glycinate or magnesium, you know, citrate in our products as opposed to a magnesium oxide. I couldn't explain the mechanism to you of why that's important, right? But we work with folks now who explain why that's important.
Right.
And we listen to them and we believe them and we try to implement that.
Well, I think that's a great point. I mean, here you are, you're the CEO and the founder of the company, and I mean, you're learning every single day. And I would say the same thing about those strength coaches, right? You've identified the influencers, you've identified the educated with the nutritionist and those strength coaches that have an interest in nutrition, right? But I think, you know, there's a vast amount of strength coaches out there like myself that, I mean, when you're a strength coach, you're an expert in speed, power, balance, coordination, kinesthetic awareness, skill acquisition, you got all these variables, nutrition. I mean, you got all these variables that you have to be educated in. And obviously things are going to be skewed, right? Wherever your interests might lie, you know, that's going to be skewed to some degree. So here you are, you know, you've got a great product. You've got the right, ingredients. How do you educate the uneducated, right? I mean, how do you educate that coach that is, you know, that does care about their athlete, that is a very smart individual, but maybe just doesn't understand the nutrition market, doesn't understand magnesium nitrate versus magnesium oxide? How do you go about educating that person?
I think you have to start with looking at people and trying to inspire people to just want a better product. You know, the sort of best targets for us in terms of likely consumers, people that are going to be consumers of our product, as opposed to the people, you know, like generally folks at professionals teams that are sort of already at that level and just kind of get it right away. The folks that are at the second tier for us are frankly the biggest opportunity, in that they're probably already buying organic produce. They're probably already buying, you know, grass-fed or pasture-raised meats and eggs.
Right.
They're already trying to do these things to treat their body right. They just haven't been taught yet how that applies to certain category.
Sure.
Right? Because to your point, you're a strength coach. You're an expert in what? I don't know how many things, but not everything. Right. Right. Just like as an entrepreneur, right? I feel like I have a really, really good grasp on like two things.
Yeah.
Right. And there are 500 things that are important to this business.
Right.
So to be able to look to people that truly are experts in the space, right? To work with those people and rely on those opinions and trust those opinions. So you need to look at customers that either have a desire to learn more about this space, or that you can create a desire to learn more about in this space. And that's what I think is generally still very, very attractive to me about the fitness, the health and fitness industry. And that, you know, people talk about it so negatively in this respect, in this market so often, but even when people are going wrong, even when people are recommending products or exercises or programs or practices that you think are detrimental to health or performance, or even just not up to your standards, I think it's very, very uncommon actually that those people are recommending something that they don't believe to be beneficial to that individual.
Right.
Meaning that I think actually people in this industry generally do want to help and have a desire to learn and be beneficial. And that's the hardest thing to do.
Right.
To me, that's really encouraging that like you've already crossed the biggest hurdle.
Right.
Right. That it just becomes a matter of education. It just becomes a matter of teaching them that you know, you care how your meat was raised. Guess what? You should care how these animals were raised as well. You should care how those plants were grown before they ended up in your product, et cetera. There's a million different reasons you could go through on an individual basis, but the biggest thing is trying to look at and believing that there's a market of people that actually want to learn and want to do better.
Yeah, I think that's my point, is I think that you're not in this field for any period of time if you don't care about the athlete, bottom line. I mean, you just won't last. It's just too hard. And I think everybody that's working in the strength and conditioning space wants that for their athletes. Sometimes it's just a matter of education. You just don't know what you don't know sometimes, you know.
I think that's exactly right.
You know,
that's been huge for me. You know, that's been really huge for me. I hear you guys talk about leadership on this podcast a lot, and I think that's been a really, really important learning curve for me as well, to sort of take recognition of the things that I don't know.
Right.
Business, right? And be able to trust others to give me informed opinions about them, right? To give people sort of all the time of day to set me straight.
Right. That's what makes it tough, you know, with you know, again, big pharma and you know, you got all these scientists that are maybe, you know, they're not in a double blind study, but it's some sort of funded study that's coming out and saying, who knows what, God knows what sometimes. And I know there's been a lot of times where I've just thrown my hands up and been like, we're just going to eat food. we're just going to eat food and we'll make it happen. But I agree with you. How did you guys go about it? Obviously, startup company.
Yeah.
Entering in a crazy competitive space. You walk into any GNC and you can see freaking 5,000 products, right? Different products. Yeah. How did you decide on your core products, what they were, and what you felt like how that could make a dent into the performance variable for these teams?
It's a great question. And to be honest with you, if I were to start again, would I have chosen the same products? Maybe, maybe not. But the rationale for where we started specifically with protein powders is that it's sort of the 800-pound gorilla of the market, if you will. So the only category in sports nutrition that's larger than protein powder is sports drinks.
Yeah.
But that's a little skewed, right? Because people who are not athletes or not training buy Gatorade and Powerade all the time, right? They consume it, frankly, more as like a soft drink than they do actually as a sort of sports nutrition product. So right. The reason that protein powder is so large as a market segment is because the people who do consume it, the weirdos like you and me, right? We consume it really, really regularly. And that to me made for an interesting opportunity, because that meant that there was a targetable group of consumers who I believed were very, very valuable on an individual basis, meaning that they weren't just buying a lot of protein powder every year, but they were also probably buying other products as well. And we thought this was a place where we could come in and make a real dent, meaning that we could make a product that was, qualitatively and quantitatively better than the competitors, and we could acquire people on an economic basis that made sense, meaning that we were going to get more value out of every customer than what we paid to acquire that customer, even with sort of a single or, you know, limited product offering. Obviously, the intention is to expand the product line pretty meaningfully, not only this year, but in subsequent years. But sort of the math had to pencil out right from the get-go, given how competitive this space is.
Yeah, it makes complete sense. You know, we talked a little bit off camera, and I talk about it a lot on the show about having to take risk and taking action and taking risk. And those are two things that really separate people. And another way of looking at that, I think, is passion and purpose, right? Passion is just the energy you bring to something, and that wavers sometimes. And purpose is something where you feel called. It's a calling. It's your life's work, and you have to do it. At one point in this process, you felt like you were called. It was a purpose. It was a life's purpose to end up eventually even leaving Harvard to go and continue to build this company and take that risk. But felt compelled that you were making a product that wasn't just competing and making money and going out and entering that space. You felt like it was actually like it's actually going to make a difference in these players' lives and help them become the best versions of themselves. You know, where does that power come from to take that type of risk? I'm sure there was people in your life that are like, you're crazy. You're dropping out of Harvard to go do this, and you're going to enter this multi-billion-dollar industry.
My parents are still not really stoked on that.
Yeah, I can bet they. I bet they probably aren't. Where does that will come from? And talk a little bit about that purpose of going and making that kind of impact in these athletes' lives.
You know, there's so much to unpack there. I think to back up a little bit, I started this business actually before going to college, as we talked about offline. And my intention or my hope at the time was that I could put the first products together, put the brand together, launch the brand, hire a CEO, and then go to school and have a, quote, normal experience. That was my hope, and that was the plan at the time. And that was the vision I sold my parents on, which is why they were initially quite supportive of this. I mean, they're still supportive, right? They're just not happy about the Harvard thing. Yeah. Sorry, Mom. Anyways, that was the plan. And what happened was we actually did try to hire a CEO. And he was with the company for maybe, I don't know, not long. And actually had to leave, I'd say, less than 3 months into the job because of a number of really unfortunate personal circumstances, which I won't get into. That just basically meant he was not going to have the time for, you know, frankly, I think a full-time job, let alone a startup.
Yeah.
And that left me about halfway or maybe two-thirds of the way through my first year at Harvard with, you know, a product that was just about ready to launch, several employees that we'd raised money for and we're now paying full-time salary to, and no CEO. So we were left in a pretty tough position. We considered several options, including, you know, trying to find another CEO. But at the end of the day, I made the decision that I wanted to be the one to return to the company. And for me, that meant I had to leave school. So that's the story. And I guess if you got any questions there, I'm happy to answer that. But to get back to your point, I don't think there was a point where I was, sitting in my dorm room and thinking like, yeah, if I just drop out and I become the CEO, this is going to work and this is going to be successful.
Sure. You know,
there was no point in there where it's such an interesting balance, you know, where there was no point in there where I could like rationally get myself to a place where it's like, yes, the math on this works out. This is 100% going to be successful. There was no scenario or no math that added up there.
Right.
I did it because I was taking a bet, right? That's just the nature of it. You're taking a bet, not on yourself, but on not only on yourself, I should say, but on, I think, unwavering self-belief and on sort of faith, frankly, that you don't always get to know how it ends. So did it feel like a big risk? Yeah, definitely. Definitely. But I think personally, you shouldn't start a business. You certainly shouldn't start a business that you believe is going to be huge or impact a lot of people's lives unless you're willing to make those decisions, unless you're willing to make those tough calls and you're willing at any point to fail. Like, yeah. That's what I feel like has made this successful thus far, is that we genuinely feel like when we go out every day and when we are, you know, making pitches, when we're making new products, when we're doing anything with this business new, that we are at literally every point 100% prepared to fail. We don't expect to, but we're completely ready for it.
But not to sound like the crotchety old man, but I think that's the problem with the generation, right? Is that, you know, it's the video game generation where it was easy to press reset, right? It was easy to press reset instead of go. And I think you're absolutely right. I think the people that are great in this world don't view failure as a setback. They view it as a learning opportunity. You know, you just found a way not to do something. And obviously Momentus has gone on to great success and continuing to build off of those successes each and every day. But I agree with you 100% that to do anything great in this world, if you're not fully bought in, and I think more importantly is unless you believe wholeheartedly that you're thinking you're making a difference in this world, you know, that's if you believe that, then those risks, they'll always pay off. And if you fail, it's a learning opportunity and you'll move on. And college is always there, not you for specifically, but for anybody that's listening, you take that risk, you take that job that you maybe don't, you know, maybe it's the right move, maybe it's not, but, you know, those things pay off, in life experience that you can't ever get back in any other way. So I agree with you 100%.
I was just going to say, I think you have to take those risks. I think you have to be looking for those opportunities. It's so funny that you describe it as a generational thing that way. I'm perhaps too young to describe perhaps the attitude or mentality that your generation carried. But I can tell you that when I was at school, and I still see it on social media every now and then, people use this term, Sunday scaries.
Sunday scaries.
Yeah, I know, very silly word, but it basically, my understanding is that it's when people are feeling, people tend to feel anxious sometimes on Sunday. They feel worried, you know, they're like, oh my God, I'm 21. What am I going to do this summer? Am I going to finish my homework tonight? Maybe I shouldn't have partied so much last night. I've got too much work going on. I don't know what my job's going to be. I don't know.
Right.
I don't know. So much uncertainty, so much on my plate, so much I don't know about myself, so much risk that's coming my way. I hear that term all the time, and I think it's kind of bullcrap. I think you're supposed to be.
Yeah.
I think you're supposed to feel that way.
I don't disagree with you. I think, you know.
If
you're too comfortable.
Nervous before a big game?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Absolutely. I think you're supposed to feel that way.
that's the adrenaline of life. I mean, that's when you know that you're making, that's when you know that what you do matters somehow, some shape or form, is when you have that kind of mentality. I that's a great point. I like that a lot. We talked a little bit of leadership and management. Now you're in a position again, Momentus is building upon success after success at this point, you know, to the point now where you're having an impact both not just in the nutrition space, but also in, you know, kind of leadership and management of either employees or athletes that you work with, or sponsored athletes or whatever it may be. I mean, you're making an impact not just in their nutritional life, but also in their the way that they approach this world. Talk a little bit about how you've developed that both in yourself and with others.
Which aspect specifically? How we've developed an impact within the athletes or the individuals that we work with, or?
Well, let's start internally. Let's start with your company. You've gone from essentially just you at some point. Yeah. We're now, how many employees are in Momentus?
Seven.
So seven employees that
going up again pretty shortly here.
And again, I mean, I love the mentality of that, right? I mean, it's very much the David and Goliath, right, type of mentality where it's seven people taking on this world and beaten.
Yeah, we don't want a lot more than that.
Right. Well, you're in, I think last count was 40 of those professional organizations, right? I mean, something along those lines.
Yeah, 50.
Yeah, 50. There you go. I mean, it's impressive. So, I mean, you're having to lead this group each and every day. Obviously the mission is something that you keep in front of them at that point, but what are some of the tactics that you're doing, especially with the fact that, you know, your age, I think, is a number. It doesn't really matter, but you're a relatively young guy. I would imagine you got people that are older than you in your company that you're having to lead on a daily basis. What are some of those tactics that you're using, and what are some takeaways for maybe strength coaches?
Yeah, I'm definitely the youngest by a long margin, but that's not really It just hasn't really been an issue. I think the most important thing is pretty closely related actually to the mission of the company, but isn't specific to our mission. I think the most important thing and what's made us a successful team and a team that really likes working together is that everybody really wants to be here. You know, everybody really is excited to be a part of what we're doing. They're excited to be a part of the team. They're excited to work with each other, and they're authentic, you know, that they were or are athletes, you know, they were or are strength coaches, that they all do have garage. They've all got, like you, they've got gyms in their garages. Like this is my basement where I'm sitting right now. Right. Quite literally. You know, this is what we call the office. It's a culture of people that really are excited and feel, I think, frankly, privileged to be working in a fulfilling job in the space. That's like number one, two, and three for me.
Yeah.
I think after that, the biggest things we've done that have been successful are placing a lot of trust in our team members, placing a lot of trust in each other. We try to allow people wherever possible to, you know, make their own mistakes. We try to be really transparent with each other. You know, I say this all the time, and we say this before every board meeting, you know, don't just tell people what they want to hear, right? Tell people what they need to hear. We should never have an update go out to the group that's only positive news, because that's almost certainly not the case.
Couldn't agree with that more.
Yeah. So try to be really over the top in the communication that way. Try to let people make mistakes. We try to be, try to place a lot of trust in each other. And then I think what we touched on before is really, really important to me as well, that we try to really rely on each other's strengths, and that nobody in this business, especially myself, is an expert in everything, right? Like I said, just at the basic level of, you know, formulation of the product. God, I trust my opinion as much as anyone else when it comes to taste, but when it comes to actually, you know, one source of magnesium or protein versus another, then you know, we have to trust an expert's opinion on that, or a committee of experts' opinion on that, right? When it comes to working with you know, an athlete or working with an individual like yourself, you know, we've got to rely on the people in the organization who have that experience. I think I learned that from other people as well, and that one of the first folks we brought into this company as an advisor was Mark Uyama, who's at the Vikings now. And he has this sort of interesting style where when I ask him a question about a product or a person or anything, right, he'll very rarely give me an answer right away.
Yeah, that's true.
He'll very, very rarely give me an answer right away. His style is almost always like, I don't know, but I can get an answer in 24 hours. It's more like, I don't know anything, but I know all the right people to ask.
Right. Or he's going to ask you 20 more questions. I agree with you.
Yes. He's very, very, very friendly guy, to your point. But that I've always like really appreciated that in people, that they, when they don't pretend to know more than they do and are willing to, not just defer to other people, but like are genuinely interested in the opinions of others, right? Like some of the most interesting connections on the marketing side for this business, on the consumer marketing side of our company, have come through our sales team, because those are the people that are deeply integrated into the strength and conditioning and training world.
Right.
Like the folks that you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. Well, they're in the trenches, right? They're in the trenches, and they're hearing the needs, and they're communicating the needs. And I mean, that's it's not easy selling something you don't believe in. And so it's probably easier for those guys to speak up, I would think.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly right. And that was, again, not something that was, I'd say, obvious to me at 18, thinking I was, you know, smarter than I am. But I've come to learn that, and I'm continuing to learn the value of that every day. So it's like every month I look back and I'm like, yeah. And I was so stupid last month. but I love that feeling. I love that feeling, right? I love the feeling that I'm progressing quickly and learning a lot, right? I love that feeling. And I think, frankly, that's a feeling that I didn't get in school. I think school is really beneficial for a lot of people. But for me, man, there was not one damn night that I was out with, you know, with friends or at any sort of social event that I didn't feel like, man, I kind of just want to go to bed.
Yeah.
I kind of just want to go to bed because I want to get up and go to work in the morning, or I want to get up and lift in the morning, you know?
Yeah. I think that's so important, is when you have that kind of drive, it's something that you just have to, it's a call. Like I said, it's a calling. I think it's something that you have to pour yourself into wholeheartedly. And, just being in team sports my whole life, it's so much better with a team, you know, and having a team of people that own their responsibilities. But then also are willing to know their strengths and weaknesses and be open about that. I mean, you can't have anything better than that. So hearing you talk about it, I think, you know, to recap that, I think it's purpose, you know, the purpose, everybody has to believe in the purpose. It's hiring authentic people and then trusting those people. And I think that's a pretty good recipe for success, in my opinion.
Yeah. It's like, I think even the greatest coaches have somebody else write their program for them personally.
Oh yeah. That's the hardest thing in the world to do. I hate writing my own program.
No, you don't want to do that. You don't want to do that. It's not even related to whether you think you can, right? You need somebody that is can you need somebody you need an outside opinion.
And of course.
And I was just trying to use an example of, you need to be able to place trust in somebody else, right? Yeah. Even in something that's extremely intimate like that. And that, just in that example specifically, you know, you do that because you need somebody who's detached.
Right.
You need somebody who doesn't care whether you had a rough day at work that morning. Right.
Sure. That's a good point. Yeah. That's why I love, everybody knows that I'm into jiu-jitsu, and I, you know, that's what I love about it. I get my butt kicked every day. I walk out of there, I'm like, golly, I'm not learning anything, you know. But at the same time, but I am learning something new every single day and growing every single day. And people, you know, it's, you know, when the professor will come over and just say, just put your foot just 2 inches higher, and all of a sudden the move works. It's amazing, you know. And I think it's awesome. Well, man, we end the show with some resources here. Give us the best piece of coaching business advice you've ever received.
Oh, man. I could give you like 100 of them. I'd say that for the best business or coaching advice, honestly, I'd say this was one that was taught to me again in many different ways by my dad, but very explicitly again by David when I was in middle school. He said, consistency is king. And that was something that made immediate sense to me in training, but took until very recently for me to sort of fully grasp with respect to other areas of my life. And that, you know, you don't ever walk into the gym, right, and expect to do one massive workout and then see the results, right? You expect to see the results from consistency. You expect to see the results from doing the work again and again and again and accumulating all these tiny, tiny marginal gains and improvement, right, that over time accumulate to something really, really impressive. And I didn't understand how that applied to other aspects of my life until very recently, in that I started making the same realization with my business, and that previously I'd started by, you know, trying to like work on one massive thing at a time. And when I'd start, you know, when I'd start some project, I'd try to just like I literally work on it. I'd start something after dinner and I'd be like, man, this is such an interesting idea. Like, I'm going to work on this. And I'd literally work on it until like 2 a.m.
Yeah.
Right. And the problem with that was it just wore me out so much, right? It wore me out so much to the point where I wouldn't come back to it for a week, or I couldn't come back to it for a week. I was sick of it, or I had some other idea that was going to take 5 hours that night, right? And instead, what I've tried to do now is I try to look at them every day, even if it's 10 minutes, 5 minutes, 15 minutes, whatever it is, right? I'm trying to look at those things every day, because over time, that's going to add up to something a lot more meaningful.
Absolutely. Give us a book, app, and website recommendation.
Say it again. Book, app, and website?
Yep.
Oh, boy. Book, I think it just totally depends what you're looking for. One of the advisors to this business, one of our first investors, sent me a book last year called Start at the End, which I think is a really, really interesting book and applies to, frankly, very specifically to business, but has really been applicable for a lot more than that to me. Shout out to Rob Dyrdek for that recommendation. Said app.
Yep.
Oh, that's an easy one, actually. I think the Notes app, the free Notes app that comes on your iPhone, or I'm sure there's something similar on Android. Sorry if you're on Android, but like, I think that free Notes app that comes on the iPhone is the most underrated app in app history. I use it literally 3 times a day.
Yep.
You've got this thing in your pocket all the time that just lets you write down ideas, write down thoughts, reminders, whatever it is. I literally use it multiple times every single day. I don't know about it. I think it's vastly underused. Website, I mean, my most common right now has got to be Gmail, but other than that, I think I've really liked any website that lets you record your training. I currently use this website called Training Peaks because it lets you do like 14 different kinds of, maybe 25, I don't know what it is, a million different types of activity. Because, like, you know, I still lift 3 days a week, but like I do, you know, skiing, cross country skiing, running, mountain biking, swimming. Like I do a whole bunch of stuff. So I want it in a place where I can record all of that. And it's really, really important for me personally that I record that, because I really like to see how it changes over time. I like to see how it influences how I feel throughout the day when I was working out in the morning versus the afternoon versus twice in the afternoon versus once in the evening, et cetera.
Right.
I just think, even if the data is informal, I think the more data you can get about yourself, the earlier, the better.
Yeah. TrainHeroic is, the holding company for TrainHeroic is Peaks, TrainPeaks.
Oh, great.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. Well, man, you know, I'd say this quite a bit on the show, and I think it's applicable to you as well. I love originators and innovators, and I think people that take those risks and take action and go out and create something from scratch. I mean, those are the people that change the world, and you're doing that in obviously the nutrition way, in the nutrition world, but also in the big world in a small way there. And I think that blows me away. I think when people do that, it's very, very impressive. So appreciate you coming on the show and sharing the story with everybody.
Thanks, Ron. I really appreciate that, man. It means a lot coming from you. And obviously, you got my number. You got Chris's number. So hit us up anytime.
That That's it for this episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk. Thanks to this week's guest, as well as our sponsors, for bringing this episode to you for free. Make sure to check out ronmckeefrey.com, where you can join our mailing list, find the show notes, including all the links and resources mentioned, and information about Coach McKeefrey's other products. While you are there, please join Coach McKeefrey in the comments section thanking our guest for sharing. If you haven't subscribed to Iron Game Chalk Talk on YouTube or iTunes yet, make sure to do so. Comments, ratings, and reviews are always welcome. Coach McKeefrey can be found on Twitter at @rmckeefrey, on Facebook and YouTube at @ron.mckeefrey. That's it for this week. Be sure to check back next week for another great episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk.